Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
From SI.com, the outstanding Mark Wogenrich. Sir, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, as always, Steve. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you as well. We're coming up on 1 year of name, image, and likeness officially. That'll be on Friday. Gene Smith brought up at least the thought of maybe the schools should have more involvement in this. What is your thought on schools being more involved in NIL?
I think that might help some of this situation, because right now you've got college football coaches and athletic directors, not college football coaches, but coaches everywhere, athletic directors, stakeholders in the universities, everybody is dipping their toes as far into it as they can, but they're limited what they can do. It's almost, you know, like coaching restrictions that you get so many hours with players and then so many people who can work with them, so many people who can go on the road, that sort of thing. But if you, outside of that, if you're inside this, kind of NIL bubble in your institution, and then outside of it, the mushroom cloud can grow infinitely. I don't think that's good. That doesn't achieve any balance, and maybe giving, you know, athletic departments, the stakeholders inside, more control over that might wrestle some of the control away from those outside agents who are causing some of the issues.
Yeah. I mean, when you're getting stories that a quarterback who's going to commit to Miami evidently is getting $9.2 million or some, he's getting more money than Tua. To a place for the pro team.
Some of the NFL rookie deals are probably going to, you know, guys signing rookie deals saying, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly.
I could have stayed in school.
Exactly. That's why I looked at Kofi Coburn in Illinois, who didn't get drafted, and nobody expected him to get drafted. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, he could have stayed and made some coin. They love him there. But yeah, but you're right. I mean, what is that telling everybody?
Exactly, it's upending the cart of every part of this. And now, I think a lot of these stories are what draw us into NIL. I think for the most part, overwhelmingly, I think it's probably working as it was designed and intended and should. I mean, I was following along last week at that NIL summit, and it just seems like a lot of really smart people got together and brainstormed a lot of really good ideas for how to grow this sustainably and responsibly. That being said, there's always going to be a segment of any business market, you know, that is going to try to grow something, like I said, in a mushroom cloud form, or grow something exponentially when it, you know, to quick buck, you know, that sort of thing. And I think that's where some of this comes in. We've had a discussion before about ROI. What's the return on investment for investors? For some people, it literally is, I want to win a national championship. So the dollar value, or the amount of money they're going to invest in this, does, you know, matters to a point, but it doesn't much matter, as long as they're winning. If they don't, then they reinvest that money in a new coach or something like that instead of the NIL.
Right. No, exactly. And I agree with you. I actually think for the most part, the part that we never talk about because it's not sensational, for the most part, I think it's actually worked quietly for a lot of the athletes out there.
Think about one of the great deals that I thought, it was so creative, and this is a really good business move on both parts, with regard to Will Levis, the quarterback, former Penn State quarterback at Kentucky. He signed an NIL deal with a horse farm. So he basically represents a horse. You know, that's a great bit of marketing there. That's a really smart bit of marketing. There's, you know, Nicholas Singleton at Penn State just a couple of days ago, and I put the story up today at the All Penn State website, little plug there. But I talked to the CEO of the company that signed it, a Pennsylvania company called West Shore Home. Mm-hmm. They felt it was a good branding idea to go between them. And so they signed a deal there that's like an in-state player endorsing and doing, kind of a branding deal with a Pennsylvania company. Those sorts of things are really going to work with, athletes in any sport endorsing, energy drinks or equipment. That's all the stuff that we wanted to see, but we've gotten agents involved. So when you've got agents and people who cover college football, similarly to what agents do who, cover professional sports, they're going to leak some of the maybe it's more salacious terms of any deals that are involved to try to get them, to kind of brand themselves as well. Agents are in this market now too, for better or for worse.
Right, exactly. Live for Life's going to be on Thursday. First time in 3 years.
Yeah.
Like everything else, first time in 3 years. It's up there. So I feel like every time I turn around, it's the first time in 3 years we're doing this. I've always felt it was like the unofficial start of, like, you feel you're getting closer to whatever. What have been your thoughts over the years just of the event itself?
I mean, I go back to the days when Scott Shirley was there and he ran it, and it was just such a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
I mean, just going way back and how it evolved. That would evolve from just this personal thing of wanting to do something to the idea of, hey, let's lift weights and have, like, fitness competition, essentially, in order to raise money for, at the time, kidney cancer awareness. And then it blooms into uplifting athletes and chapels across the country. Just that kernel that blossomed into something terrific to benefit the rare disease community. I can't praise enough what Scott Shirley has done. And now I guess Brett Brackett is in charge, and the former Penn State receiver there is in charge and working with it. I just it's such a terrific organization. I also was always struck initially when they would do this is you're bringing football players. You said it's kind of the unofficial start, but some of the stuff they would do is kind of nuts.
Yeah.
If you're talking about out of season, I guess, obviously I know they're training. That sort of thing. I know they're lifting weights, but you know the tug of war competitions and the lifting tires, and I think they did like the giant sandbag tosses or whatever. All these sorts of things. Yeah. I'm watching this, going, worried about somebody tearing something there or twisting something there. Just in the back of my mind. But it was always just really good fun to watch, and I thought it was also a really good kind of Penn State community event too. I mean, going back to the days when it was at the old lacrosse field or Alabama Hall, that people came out, and it was a good way for them to get up close with these guys and see new players. And that freshman, I don't know if they're going to do it this year, but that freshman kind of kids clinic was fun to watch too. It was fun to watch. Saquon Barkley was interacting with a couple of 5-10-year-olds back then. You always see the freshman players doing that, and a lot of them seemed. You could kind of gauge even then, who's really involved, who's taking this seriously, who's really participating in this, and who seems to be dismissive. Is that, can I draw a parallel to how engaged they are then with the team, and does that get them on the field faster? Just little things like that that I would watch over the years with Live for Life.
Well, no, I always thought that was important. And see, this is why I find this more important than ever. We started out with name, image, and likeness. Now we're up to a part where the players themselves, for charity, have organized all this themselves, and they're not looking to get anything out of it except to help out the charity and just
to give,
right to give, because all the stories, and they're all the big money stories. I mean, we hear right where the players are. This is their deal of giving back, and I think that's an important juxtaposition, especially on considering the next day will be the 1 year anniversary of name, image, and likeness.
Right, exactly. And it's still student run. It's still entirely student run. Chris Stoll, the long snapper, president's going to run these, going to run it. I mean, the presidents who've been in charge of this over the years, players have been in charge of this over the years, gone on to do some really impactful things and raise a lot of money. I think they're up about, what, $1.5 million, I think,
yeah,
that they've raised. Just, you know, the Penn State Uplifting Athletes chapter, and then the creation of those chapters across the country, to see them now being able to restart their in-person Live for Life and you know, other fundraising opportunities coming out of this is really good.
How anxious are you to see what the TV deal looks like? And I'll ask you this: just does the Big Ten need ESPN to be a part of it, or can they go? Can they go without them?
I just, it's such a brand that in my mind, I think they need it. They might not. I mean, I just came back. I spent a week at the U.S. Senior Open.
Yes.
Out of Talkin' Valley Country yeah. Club. Great event.
Yes.
And it's back, you know, all the USGA events are now back on NBC, where it just seemed like it fits better. Maybe their coverage mm-hmm. is better. You know, the U.S. Open was on NBC, that sort of thing, than it was on Fox. And you maybe you might have asked that question, does the USGA need NBC or need Fox? Fox made that huge deal, and it just seemed like both parties really did not get what they want out of it. Now,
right.
I'm wondering how, if that, you know, could the Big Ten kind of do the same thing if there's just a big, big money player that comes in and just overwhelms them with cash, like Fox did, you know, with USGA Golf. Could the Big Ten turn toward that instead of realigning with ESPN, which is still at least in our mind's eye, the college football, I think the college football destination, primarily for the Big Ten. I mean, I know they're getting bigger games with Fox, and we all know, CBS and the SEC, that sort of thing. But going into the playoff and the bowl games, still was ESPN, ABC. So I think maybe just from a brand perspective, they might. But, you know, other people, you know, people younger than me are, you know, seem to be able to find these things,
mm-hmm.
Seem to be able to find the broadcast wherever it may be. And if streaming services want to engage more, to engage more with this public, maybe they would get a, you know, they would enter this deal, or perhaps ESPN, in order to try to, you know, sell ESPN Plus as a bigger platform, mic them over the top and say, you know, we need, in order to retain our, you know, our market share and enhance that streaming service, we're going to need to be part of this deal.
Right. The only element to me about not being on ESPN is their ability to put whatever entity it is on ignore. They've had that ability. But I also think if they expand the college football playoff, I think there's a good chance ESPN loses exclusivity on that because of the number of games, and you get more money from multiple partners. So
yeah, they might not be able to afford it
right
by itself.
Right.
Yeah.
And but I also think you need multiple partners to do it.
Yeah.
So to me, that does that become a wash because they'll need somebody like a
fair,
Fox
yeah.
maybe to come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Fair enough. And you made a really good point that I hadn't quite got to, or hadn't really thought of yet, but yeah, ESPN, you know, they can ignore the Olympics pretty well when they do not have
yes
the rights to the Olympics. So so you wonder where does Big Ten football go without ESPN?
Right.
I mean, College Football Game Day still is the marquee show. So what happens if it's not going to be in Big Ten markets? Which, it, you know, without a contract, I would think it might not be there as often.
I have to ask you about the U.S. Senior Open since you just went to Saucon
yeah.
Valley. What was the turnout like? And, you know, and Padraig Harrington won yesterday. Was there? That's one that Mickelson should have been playing in. I mean, he should have been playing in the U.S. Senior Open. Yet he has not played in the U.S. Senior mm-hmm. Open for whatever reason. What was the vibe at Saucon Valley?
It was good. It wasn't as good as it was. I mean, I go back to the 2000 Senior Open in Saucon Valley.
Yes.
And I was there, and that had huge crowds. But that was it was a different market, I think, at the time. Golf was a different market. And that tournament was, I think, as good a Legends Field as you're ever going to put together. mean, that tournament had Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, Lee Trevino, Tom Kite, Tom Watson. I mean, Hale Irwin won it. I mean, it was just overflowing with, like, golf names then. So they did not match that turnout. They had a really nice collection of players there. And, the crowds were okay. I think they were pretty good. They had a nice festival atmosphere with it that was really interesting. They created kind of this festival theme in an open space on the course between holes that had been used for corporate hospitality. And during the practice rounds, they had a band playing. I mean, the USGA, I'm surprised they allowed this kind of thing to happen, first of all. But I think they like to test some of these ideas at the Senior Open and then bring them about. There were really good crowds following around, like Rockwood Mediate, and then yesterday, Padre Carrington in the last group. But I think overall, probably didn't reach what they wanted. The reason that Saucon Valley bid on this, I mean, to bring it back to Phil Mickelson, the reason Saucon Valley bid on this particular Senior Open is because Phil Mickelson was eligible. I mean, they put the bid back in 3 or 4 years ago, and he was a guy they targeted. I think all the other circumstances regarding him and, his comments about, like, Saudi Arabia and then switching to live golf and his self-imposed, perhaps, absence on the PGA Tour, I would assume made a difference. The other thing is that I wonder if, because of where the U.S. Open was at Brookline and Saucon Valley was, it's 5 hours away, they had it back-to-back weeks, and I think that limited the idea that I don't know if Phil would have played anyway, because he probably would have, entered the U.S. Open thinking I have a chance to win. So I don't know if he would have entered the Senior Open, same thing, to play back-to-back weeks. I think the only player in the field who was at both was Jim Furyk.
Yeah.
And he had a bit of a rough start, but then weather was an issue, but played okay on the weekend. It's a great event. I think there's a relaxed atmosphere there. Guys sign. They really participate with the crowd. They really kind of, Rocco's, fun to watch. These guys are just fun to watch. It's competitive without being in, that intensity of a U.S. Open. And I think they do a really good job of relaxing a U.S. Open, I think, at a Senior Open.
They've already had their success. Padraig Harrington's a three-time major winner, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Bernhard Langer, has won a couple of Masters in the course of his career. The guys in that field have, they're probably looking around saying, hey, I'm 50 to 60, and they're still paying me to play golf. This is pretty cool. I think there's a lot of that attitude. At least when I've been around them, that's the attitude I've always sensed.
Yeah, it's a dichotomous attitude, too, because you have that, and then you have the guys, like there was a player from New York. I wrote about him today. His name's Rob LeBritz, and he's a club pro for 30 years. And he said, I'm going on the Senior Tour. And he won their Q School, which is an unbelievably difficult thing to win. It's like five players get Q School, or senior, tour cards, Senior Tour cards, PGA Tour Champions cards, as they're officially known. Coming out of their Q School, it's unbearably difficult. He, T4 played well, was a huge fan favorite. So you get those kinds of players out there. So you get this really nice mix on the Champions Tour. And then on the flip side, you've got, Steve Stricker making a run on Sunday, nipping at the heels of Padraig Harrington. What was the last two things that they were most, famous for? Being the Ryder Cup captain.
Right.
Which, you can take things back. And always kind of, reflect on some legacy. Padraig Harrington eagle the par 5 on Saturday. Mm-hmm. He hit a 5-wood. And then he remembered that. He didn't, compare that to a 5-wood he hit. It was 2008 at Birkdale when he eagled the par 5, too, sort of thing. And, that club literally is hanging in the Birkdale.
Yes.
The clubhouse at Birkdale. And he's like, it wasn't that shot, but it was still pretty good. So, if as a golf fan, I think one of the great things about the Senior Open is that it gives you perspective on what these guys have done in their past. And you get to see them, they can still bang it out there. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's a great venue. Saucon Valley is a great venue for it.
Oh, yeah, unbelievable.
Great
place.
Venue.
The
only one I wish, and I know they can't do it because the property would not allow it, because it's just not. Yeah, love to see Pine Valley get it once, but they can't put. Yeah. There's no place to put any stands or anything like that. It's a very.
Yeah, there's no place to put anything anywhere.
It's a tight, tight property. Mm-hmm. All right, thanks so much, Mark. A lot of fun as always. Great to talk with you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Dave. Hope to see you this week at the Live for Life.